Hello, people, and welcome to the fourth Thundercast, Thunderbolt Games podcast. My name is Matthew Sorey, and joining me today is Shane Ryan.
Now then.
And Nick Hall.
Hello.
Evening, gentlemen. How's everyone doing?
Hello.
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad. All ready for Christmas?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was as enthusiastic as I can get.
No, I'm good to go. I've got two Christmases this year. I've already had one. So.
How does that work?
Because I had one with my girlfriend on Friday, so I don't get to see her over Christmas.
Are you spending it with your families?
Yeah, so we exchanged presents, and I made a Sunday roast and everything on Friday, so I effectively get two.
Amazing. What did she get you?
Are
we allowed to ask?
Yeah. Okay. like a geography teacher jacket. That's what I call them anyway.
With the patches on the elbows.
Leather patches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sexy.
Pipe?
Not yet.
Flat cap?
No, I've got one of those ones. Shotgun. Somewhat probably. Yes.
And braces?
Pardon?
Braces?
No.
Oh.
And a bag as well.
Good stuff.
Mm.
So Santa's already been to your house.
He has, yeah.
About me, I'm ready for Christmas. I won Christmas this year, unfortunately. But yeah, should be good. Oh, no, that's a lie, actually. I do have one of my Christmas presents early. My girlfriend gave me some shoes that she'd got me because I was looking at them online and I was thinking of buying them before Christmas. So I kind of spoiled it.
Is that because you got a Christmas night out to wear them on?
No.
No?
It wasn't for anything specific. It's just some shoes that I've wanted for a while. So I was thinking I'd just splash out and buy them for myself before Christmas. But, well, lo and behold, she'd already got them.
Okay. So what's everyone else been up to then the past few days? Started the Christmas films yet?
Well, no, not really, because I've been so absorbed playing Demon Souls. That's been my my festive mood setter.
Festive bout of instant death RPG.
I'm feeling the Yuletide spirit.
I've been knifing tigers to death on Far Cry 3. So
basically, we've been playing video games and not enjoying anything Christmassy.
Jesus, it's pathetic, isn't it?
Same here, to be honest. I mean, yesterday, it's the first time I've sat down and played video games for a long stretch. I was up to about 3 in the morning, which I don't do anymore. But I was playing Deus Ex, the last one.
All right, Human Revolution.
Yeah.
The pointy chin one.
Yeah, his chin's weird.
His chin just drove me mental. It's so pointy. I thought he had a weapon in it.
No.
That's not even the robotic part of him as well.
Yeah.
I've been playing that. It's okay.
How far are you?
Have you got to the brown bit yet?
And the yellow.
Yeah, the yellow. Just
the brown bit with a yellowy hue, or the yellow bit with a brownish hue.
I'm past
a trip to Asia, or I'm still in Asia. I'm just about to leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I'm up to. I noticed at the beginning that there's three kind of bad guy characters, so I'm guessing there's three bosses and therefore three chapters.
Oh, have you had the first boss fight yet?
I nearly turned it off and stopped playing it.
Oh, the crap one.
Choosing all these different things, so you choose to be really good at hacking because you think, well, you know, if there's a boss, there's definitely going to be a turret I can hack. But no, just stuck in a room with a minigun.
You play
all the way through, so, you know, you can only take so much damage, people fall over. But no, we've got boss cards now. If you shoot him in a shotgun, point blank, 8 times in the face, he just throws a grenade at you and you just die instantly. And then you have to sit and watch a loading screen for ages every time. And in the end, all you have to do is if you run to the other side of the room, stand behind a pillar, you can only look 5 metres and he goes, oh, where have you gone? And you can just stand there shooting him.
That's the evolution of games.
It truly is, isn't it? It's like 90s style game boss design.
Rubbish.
It's terrible. But that is one of the only bottlenecks in the game I found.
Yeah, the boss fights sort of feel a bit like they're from a different game.
Yeah, but that's okay. Probably. I personally thought that was probably the worst boss fight. The rest of them were slightly better.
Yeah.
Rubbish. Yeah. Right, anyway, so, shall we?
On with the show.
So, have we got a plan for the show?
Well, chaps, today we're going to count down the 12 days of Gamesmas.
Brilliant.
Say that. That was not in rehearsal.
Definitely not.
He's gone off script.
So we've basically got the 12 biggest topics for the year that we think need discussing, need further investigation at the end of the year. So we're going to count down the 12 days of Gamesmas and basically get you in the festive spirit by talking about the big things that have happened in the games industry this year. Alright guys, so on the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me the controversy surrounding the Mass Effect 3 ending.
That was brilliant. that was, I guess, one of the first big events, gaming events of the year.
Now, this was back in March, wasn't it,
Mass
Effect 3 came out?
Yeah.
So this is one of the early ones of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone threw a collective shit fit.
That is an amazing term for actually what happened.
Which, you know, I can understand, because it was a bit stupid.
Well, do we all agree here that the ending was a bit lackluster and it wasn't, I don't know, it didn't fulfil its potential?
I was prepared for a stupid ending. That's fine. But it just felt abrupt.
It was dog shit.
All right. Shane clearly has stronger opinions on this than myself and possibly Nick.
I just thought there's no point beating around the bush just because it's passed over 9 months. It was a rubbish ending of the worst sort. It was the Matrix trilogy all over again. You make a good first one, you have an action built second, and the third one comes along, and you just think, what are you doing? Really?
Definitely comparable to that sci-fi trilogy.
Yeah. Oh, this is the problem when you have, when the threat in the game is kind of a massive extragalactic threat, is that any way you try and wrap that up, it's going to be stupid. Because there's no way you can tie
it. I think the main problem here is that the main writer, whose name, I think it's Drew somebody, I can't remember his name now. I think he left after the first one. And so basically the story changed around for the second one. And I think the writer might have changed again for the third, so it changed again. So if you look, there's certain things that don't make any sense. Like the Reaper thing with the Terminator 2-esque sort of thing at the end of number 2. That's totally disregarded for the third one. And it doesn't have any relevance. And the whole point the original story that I understand is that the Reapers, humans have been created by the Prometheans or something, and the Reapers were actually harvesting humans because they were the cure for dark matter. So the idea was that dark matter that was mentioned in the first one was basically consuming everything. And the only way to stop it was by harvesting humans, and at the end it would be kind of the idea that it's either try and rely on science or let them do their job. So there actually was an original kind of idea bouncing around.
Mm.
But then the original engine for Mass Effect...
That was completely lost on me. Yes. I did not...
Because by the end of the first one, they hadn't really got to that point. It was still the politics of it, but that was the kind of way it was going to head, which is why they had the Reapers kind of still around. And then they had the original ending to the third one, which was going to be a big boss battle, I think. But I believe they scrapped that about 6 months or 5 months before release because it's too video gamey.
Wasn't there a leak as well? Wasn't there something about that?
I think there's an app that came out that had it's like a developer diary compilation, and it talked about how they thought they had the elusive man was a giant robot or something at the end, and you actually came.
Didn't do that.
What's the word they use? It's just escaping now when they're basically trying to indoctrinate Shepard. Well, the reason all those dreams are in it, and the reason at the end it looks weird, is I think you were supposed to be indoctrinated at the end, but they just didn't cut those bits out when they cut the original ending out, and so it just felt like a mess. And then they just went, pick a colour. And there you go, that's the end. Off you go. Yeah.
That, for me, was the worst thing. Whatever you chose, it was basically a colour.
It was.
There was some minor changes as well about who got out of the planet at the end. We should say right here that this is going to be a very spoilery filled podcast. It's very late now, but if you haven't played Mass Effect...
Well, we're not giving the enders away. We're just saying that if you get there, they basically went back and rewrote little bits that had their own errors again, but at least you got more than a minute's worth of cinematics to wrap everything up.
I did enjoy, I have to say, the game, apart from the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. I think they took the shepherd thing too far in a religious term.
The interesting story beats for me were the Genophage with the Krogans and the Salarians the resolution of the what are they called? The Geth thing. And there were two really nice storyline resolutions to those, depending on what you did, because obviously there's different things that can happen.
They wrapped up, didn't they?
Yeah, everything else had closure apart from the main story, which...
which then basically overwrote everything else that happened anyway. Yeah,
it was a blue kid that did it. He set up the station at the top.
E.T. just pointed his finger out and that's the end.
That was a spoiler. Sorry.
So what do we think about the uproar afterwards and what happened with them going up about changing the ending? What do you think about that happening?
5 minutes are up. Next topic.
Oh, damn. Didn't even get in onto the interesting part. Anyway, gaming journalism and the PR relationship I bring to you on the second day of Christmas. So this really is a discussion of Dorito Gate, as it's been termed, and what happened with an article that was written on Eurogamer by Robert Florence about the relationship between gaming journalism and PR and how about Jeff Keighley and some other characters. So what do we think of it?
I think a lot of it comes from the rise of this industry is too quick for its own good in the way that it's kind of propelled, fast-forwarded so quickly that it hasn't had the time to develop like film did with critics. Like with film, you have show business reporters who put the names and the newspapers on the side of bus reviews. It's always 4 out of 5. And then you have film critics that people actually seek out and follow. And even if they disagree with their review, they still respect why they've said it or have a conversation about it. And with gaming at the moment, it's just either I agree with your review because you like the game I like, or you're a dickhead and I hate you and I hate your website because you've given 7 out of 10 and not 9. Mm. And part of that then leads into the kind of PR relationship where this happens so quickly that there's no distance and you can't tell when one site is actually reporting or it's just everything's more controlled as well. So I think inherently, because the PR is so tight on all the information that gets released, is that there's no way to... Well, you can distance yourself, but they end up cutting yourself off from everything.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, this has been happening for... not happening. There's nothing that's happening, but... Like, I'm thinking of the controversy about when Jeff Gerstmann got fired from...
For giving Kane and Lynch.
Yeah, crap review of Kane and Lynch, even though it wasn't that crap. He gave it a 7 or a 6 or something perfectly average like that. And he got fired... basically because of the PR relationship that GameSpot had with the publishers of the game.
I think that's the pernicious element when a lot of people say, well, it's not a big deal, games are just a laugh, and that's fine, but it is an industry that sucks out hundreds of millions of dollars from everyone each year, and where that money is going and why it's going to those people is a bit of a problem. And you get things like IGN is the site that everyone goes to, but it's as much a sort of advertisement corporate site. That
personal opinion, that's more like a show business site.
Yeah, I mean, and you get things like in Mass Effect 3, you get Jessica bloody Chobot turning up in the aft of my ship. Like, what's she doing there? And then, like, she's plastered all over their website as well. So there's this really icky backslapping relationship between the two.
Do you really think it's much more than they have in, say, like the film industry? Because film critics go to free screenings of films.
But there's the divide where a film critic will always have the integrity of being a film critic, but a show business reporter will say everything's great. They're the people that go on, like, TV talk shows in the morning and say, oh, this film's out tomorrow, it's brilliant. Every film every week's brilliant.
And you're saying that you don't think that our industry has the equivalent of the film critic, that we are mainly the showbiz reporters at the moment?
Well, there are some, but they don't... It's because it's happened so quick, it's overwhelmed with showbiz reporting where websites rush to get the latest news out and all the latest news is controlled, so it's hard. There's certain people that have come through and you can seek them out, and they're quite respected in the field of what they do. But it's not... It's just because this industry's happened so quick, it's hard for that to happen.
But I do think the backlash against what happened there is kind of a good sign that people do want to have those people, you know, those people on the outside looking in and proper great game critics. And I think those people are coming through. it's just, I mean, what will happen in the next few years, we don't know. But it, like you say, it's an evolving medium. People don't really know where they're going with it. And when you're coming into it as well, a lot of these people aren't journalists. Mm. They're kids who come out of doing a media course or something, and suddenly they're in this environment where they're getting offered free stuff.
My friend says the biggest issue with video game writing is that everyone that does it is a fan of games. That's what he says. Is everyone writes about it because they do it as a hobby.
Yeah.
They end up getting too excited and trying to like everything, and that ends up making them a bit more susceptible.
Yeah, yeah. They don't have an unbiased viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing in this, the Rob Florence thing. Lauren, I can't remember her name now, but the journalist that he named.
Yeah, she complained to Eurogamer and basically got his article taken down.
She was a fan of Tomb Raider, and then... Mm. She was plastering getting loads of free stuff from
well,
the new
people. I think her thing was that she'd done some work for Square Enix.
Yeah.
And she was reviewing Square Enix games without disclosing it. I think it was without disclosing it. Oh, Shane's bells are dingling away. So on the third day of Christmas, Santa gave to me a nice, brand spanking, shiny new Wii U with no games. So has anyone here got a Wii U apart from me?
No.
Oh, my dad's got one.
Your dad's got one, Shane?
Dad's got one. He got one for his birthday.
Has he been playing Zombie U on it?
He has.
Does he like it?
Yeah, he does.
Does he feel the tension of opening his rucksack during gameplay?
Well, I think he suffers a bit the same thing as Dark Souls, where I think as he's getting older, he doesn't want to have the stress and frustration of playing games, so he plays...
He's really playing the wrong games.
Well, he gave up Dark Souls pretty quick, but I think it's the same on this, where you make progress, you die,
you
go to get your backpack off the previous person you're playing, Surge of Zombie, and then if you muck that up, it's apparently time lost, which I would appreciate, and it's good to... I wouldn't want every game like that, but it's good when a game does it and sticks to it.
But talk about the console a bit. Is he enjoying the Wii U as a console?
Yes, but it's quite early because it's still the first month of release over here.
Yeah.
I mean, I've played on it, and when I went at the Play Expo, and quite a few of them were breaking, so it took ages to actually play on one.
Yeah.
And then when I did, I wasn't convinced. The touchscreen wasn't very good. The uses of it in Zombie U were a bit tacky. Hold it up to the screen as the sniper rifle, and it was just... I wasn't too sure about that.
I've got one, and I quite like the tech. I like it more now than I did before I bought it. I was questionable of it before I bought it. But it works. It's so smooth, the use of the touchpad, and the streaming to that screen is extremely quick and responsive. Mm. But there's really nothing on there that showcases what it could do, apart from Nintendo Land, and lots of them are quite tenuous uses of it.
Yeah, and I've heard that on Nintendo Land, you have to use a lot of the other controllers if you want to get people involved.
You really do, yeah. If you really want to make the most of Nintendo Land, you need a bunch of other normal Wii controllers.
I think with the launch games as well, a lot of them are like versions of titles that have come out on the other consoles. Mm-hmm. So I think they do need to sort of find their own... get a few games out that have been designed specifically with that in mind. Because I think people would just end up playing those on the normal,
Do you think that people are going to be buying this for Christmas thinking it's just the controller add-on? Because in the adverts, you don't see the console. And one of the adverts I saw today, when if somebody's playing with a Wii controller while somebody else is using that, and it makes it look like the controller is the console. And I'm just they're not realising that people are going to get really confused.
I mean, that's been a bit of a farce on Nintendo's side in terms of PR, because I've talked to people who don't know there's a Wii U coming out, and these are people that back 6 years ago would definitely have known there was a Wii coming out, the Wii was a big thing, everyone got onto that bandwagon, but they also don't know, if they have seen it, that it's a new console. It does look like an add-on in some of the adverts.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell that it's actually a new console for the average consumer.
A quick question. Can you stream Love Film onto the controller tablet and then take it into your bedroom and watch it there?
You can do that with Netflix. I do that, yeah.
Right, okay.
That is quite good. You can stream to the toilet, which is enjoyable.
Toilet.
Yeah. It's got quite a good range as well. I mean, it works anywhere in my flat, so that's...
Does it have anything else on it? It doesn't have, like, e-readers or anything like that on it, does it?
Not that I know at the moment, no. Oh, my biggest gripe with the Wii U... is the fact that they've locked adult content on the Wii U game shop, on the online store.
Right.
For daytime hours, you can only access adult content. So I went to download Zombie U the first day that I got it during the daytime hours, and I couldn't download it. I couldn't access it. You're not allowed to.
That's ridiculous.
Regardless of your age or any other security settings, you can't download adult games during daytime hours.
I thought they did a charge on the credit card you set up as an admin charge to make sure that you're old enough to use it. Because surely if you've done that, then you're...
No, that matters not. Apparently it's some German rules and regulations which have forced them to restrict the usage of adult content during daytime hours across the whole of the EU.
Doesn't happen on other consoles.
Sorry?
Doesn't happen on other consoles.
No, it doesn't, and I don't know why it happens on the Wii U, but it does.
Seems like a weird...
odd way to treat the EU market. Just punish everyone.
Got to wait till 6 o'clock. You've done your homework, then you can buy it.
Then you can buy Zombie U.
That makes no sense to me. But I'm not too sure how well it succeeds. I think it'll sell well at first, but I don't think it'll have the 5-6 year lifespan like the Wii.
Did the Wii have a 5-6 year lifespan?
It sold a lot.
It carried on selling, yeah. And I'm really not sure of the Wii U having that kind of lifespan. I really don't think it's got its claws into the mass market consumer the same way that the Wii did. Mm. It felt like the Wii was creating its own craze, but the Wii U's jumping on a craze, if you will. The whole tablet thing.
So what topic's next?
Oh, sorry, your bells go off.
They did. They rang.
Amazing. You really should make your bells louder, Shane.
Oh, well,
anyway, on the fourth day of Christmas, my true love, Gabe Newell, gave to me an announcement of Half-Life 3. No, sorry. the Steam Box, the so-called Steam Box, Valve's front room console. So are we all excited about the Steam Box coming next year?
I don't know. I was, and then but the more I thought about it, the more I'm just thinking, where would it fit in everything? I don't understand. If it doesn't have look fill, a lot of people I know like use the Xbox now for look film and Netflix as well as games. But if it doesn't have stuff like that and it's only games, and then the PC crowd isn't going to move onto it because they're just going to attach their PC.
But they're not just talking about it just being... The way I understood it is it's not just going to run Steam. It's going to be some kind of limited PC where Steam might be the main functionality of it. But I wouldn't see them limiting, say, the download of apps because they kind of have to meet the industry standard at the moment, which is this entertainment media.
Yeah, system. I think they'll definitely have things like Netflix and stuff on it.
I mean, Valve, Steam has started distributing software now, hasn't it?
Big Picture or whatever it is, yeah. I mean, it's difficult. I think it's like they're trying to sort of get the PC audience playing in a kind of console way. And I'm not sure if there's an audience for that. I don't know if PC hardcore PC gamers will be that bothered about having the a console version in there.
Well, it's just going to be a lower spec version of what they already have.
Yeah, Steam's been such a great success that it'll be interesting to see what they do. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a good content delivery system, and they can take things like Steam sales over to the sort of console market. It'll be interesting, but
it does. I do find it, as you guys, a little confusing to understand what the place of the Steam Box will be. It doesn't seem to be filling a hole in the market.
No.
For me.
It's like on Live, because when I was at Eurogamer 2 years ago, they gave them away for free. And I came back, set it up, and it had Amnesia on it. I thought, right, I need to, you get one game for free or 99p when you signed up. And I thought, right, I'll try all this out by getting that game. And I went to play it, and you needed a mouse and keyboard. And you only get a controller with it. And I just thought, well, that's not going to work. So then what happens with the games that need a mouse and keyboard for this? That's what I don't understand. It's there's so many
variables in there.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Mm. Whereas with a PC, it's already resolved.
But it's a weird thing, though, because Valve are such a well-loved company, and we all know them as putting out really good quality products. And Steam is such a great service that, I don't know, I think I would be tempted anyway.
I
think we need more details, really, to be able to...
Yeah, but I'm really definitely interested to see what they do, because like you say, it'll be the rise of that company and how Steam's sort of improved, what Steam's done for them.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they can compete on the same sort of level as, you know, Sony and Microsoft. But I think more details needed about that one.
Well, they're an intelligent company. They talk about and they do things right, and they've risen from back in the PC days of just working their own. And we've built. If you think about how far they've come already,
it's
huge.
And Half-Life 3 would be nice, though.
Well, if releasing the Steam box, I think it's perfectly plausible that could be a launch, right?
What, make it exclusive?
I'm sold.
That would be interesting if they did make Half-Life 3 exclusive.
Yeah, that would be weird.
I would be sold, personally. But
no, I don't know. I think after moving it over to the PS3 and... What happened... I know it's diverting quickly, but what happened to people on PS3 and PC playing together on Valve games?
That kind of died a death.
I never understood that, because surely everyone in the PS3 would get absolutely battered.
Well, is Shadowrun not still up and going? Remember Shadowrun?
That was years ago.
Yeah. That was one of the first cross-play games, wasn't it?
Because I've been the same thing with Steam boxes. If you're playing with people that are playing on the PC as well, and I don't know, and how quickly it would outdate. Because how cheap can you make a PC and then still make a profit on it? Does that make sense? Because if you do a $100 box, the TV that gets Steam on it, unless they start doing a streaming service they haven't talked about.
Surely the point of a gaming PC is that you can build one if you have more. If you don't have the money.
I mean, that's really the thing. If they're going to try and release some kind of standardized hardware to kind of future-proof it, they will have to put high specs in. Yeah. And because you get lots of those kind of games that run on Steam.
Yeah. As you can define a way of developing a console that is much higher spec than the other ones, yet still remains like kind of a reasonable price.
I could only imagine them maybe having some kind of subscription service.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm. Like the rumours that surround the next Xbox.
Yeah.
And that topic's over. Let's take
Shane's beautiful bells.
And then we'll be back with four more topics.
Right, guys, on the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a gun. It was a video game gun, and it was a murder simulator as well. And it was at E3.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
These intros are getting more tortured as we go on. I love it.
I've got to do so many intros. I'm trying to make it interesting.
Ten to do us.
So many intros tenuously linked to Christmas.
So on this one, it's just from what I remember, there was the Last of Us thing about the applause at the end of the trailer or gameplay thing where some poor sod is head blown off of a shotgun.
Yeah.
And they're like, way!
There was a crowd of gaming fans and a couple of journalists who were watching that trailer at E3, and as you said, they applauded someone getting shot point blank in the face.
Mm. Yes, and I believe the other point was that it looked in the gameplay demo that it was unnecessary for that to happen, and therefore they were just doing it to kind of...
Shock value.
Yeah, but then obviously it's just a case of, well, if this is the game that's apparently... Well, the next big game that's going to show video games as art, apparently... Mm. And then they just go, oh, and there's the guy's head exploding. Then really, it's just getting back to 70s and 80s exploitation cinema, really, which I enjoy.
Yeah, well, but I think that the problem with it was that the problem was people's reaction, cheering to this kind of violence, and people kind of jump on that and say, well, that's indicative of the video game industry, and people who like video games, they're clearly unperturbed by this kind of violence and not affected by it, whereas they should be. Mm-hmm. So they see it as a positive thing because the games that they play kind of, I don't know, reward them for being violent. And it is to an extent, I did find it, that applause and clapping of that actually happening to be a bit of a weird thing to watch, really.
Mm-hmm. But then it's, see, the point I was kind of making, or the connection with exploitation cinema is, if I was thinking about, I'm not going to name the film because it's a spoiler, but at the end it has a bit of a Scooby-Doo moment where somebody takes the mask off and it's like, oh, it's Uncle Dave, and then there's a struggle of the shotgun and his head just pops. And that's the sort of thing where if you're watching it with friends, because it's that sort of film and you're in kind of watching it at home, then that's kind of the money shot moment, as it were. It's a horror film.
Yeah.
It's just when you have the biggest industry thing happening, and then people are just sat there thinking, this is the fourth game I've probably seen now, where it's just a trailer of people exploding and getting shot.
Yeah.
But I think that's the big problem, isn't it? That it would be fine if there...
Yeah,
it was every other game, but it's everything.
It's the sheer prevalence of violence throughout the industry.
Big names, big name games, like big budget, you know, AAA titles, are all about shooting people, which is fine.
Violence is safe.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, there should always be a place to explore violence within entertainment media and art forms like that, because it's a part of our makeup, it's a part of who we are, and that's why we explore it. But the problem comes when, as you were saying, everything is violent. There isn't any kind of counterpoint to it. That becomes the predominant form of video games, really. And I think there's been quite a few games this year that have showed that you don't necessarily have to have violence, like Hotline Miami. That was... no, I'm taking the piss. But something like Journey showed that you don't necessarily have to have... Well, to an extent, that had a certain amount of violence. I think what I'm getting at is... that most video games have a certain element of violence in them, and it's kind of what the medium's built on.
The easiest storyteller is just writing a script or building characters to just have people explode. Mm. Yeah. That's what Hollywood does when it can't be arsed. Have a nice car, a girl with her tits out, and an explosion, and everyone just leaves happy. Mm. And I think video games just fall on that because it makes a lot of money. I think the easiest answer is just it just makes a lot of money. It sells
And it's affecting. It's an easy way to affect. And I think part of the reason why so many games are violent is because of the interactive nature of video games. You need to make them interactive, and violence between people or objects or whatever it is a fundamental thing, a fundamental mechanic that's easy to build in a video game. It's much harder to have an interactive adventure story or something like that. Well, it's not necessarily you can't have interactive adventures, but I think part of it, the reason why so many games are violent is because of the mechanical basis, and because, as Shane says, it's quite an easy thing to affect a response from, evoke a response from.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should...
The original Tomb Raider, when I think about it, was just, you know, it's a lot more exploring and jumping about in the odd dinosaur, but when I see the trailers for the latest one, it's just people getting shot in the legs with arrows and...
Right. Just looks bloody miserable.
Yeah, I'm sure she's head blown off at the beginning if you don't press X when you're told.
I understand that the big thing now is to make everything dark and gritty. Mm. But, I mean, I would much rather double backflip and shoot a T-Rex in the face than have an attempted rape scene around a campfire.
Mm. And I mean, there's different ways you can do violence. Different ways you can do violence as well. You can use it very shallow shock value, or you can go deep with it and explore it in interesting ways. Some games do that. Anyway, next topic. The sixth day of Christmas.
My true love brought to me.
Yeah, my true love did.
Bring in the... There you go. I did that right. Let's go.
Indie games this year. What do we think?
It's been a really good year for smaller games, I think. I think we've all played some of the sort of big hitters in the indie world, like Hotline Miami. And I mean, we're not just talking indie games, I guess. We're talking just smaller budget, studio games like Walking Dead.
It is a term that gets thrown around, but really, if you're published, it's not really independent.
Yeah.
No, I mean, people talk about Journey as an independent game.
Yeah. It's like indie music, isn't it?
But like those guys have signed a deal with Sony. They're going to release three games for Sony. It doesn't necessarily feel like the independent spirit, like lone developer typing away in his bedroom.
When it's just one guy making a game on an 8-bit console. But just to clear that out of the way. But I do think when we'll get to early next year, when we release our top 20 games of the year list, there'll be quite a few in there knocking about. And I think definitely Kickstarter as well, and sort of influence that's given. But for the year of the indie, like we're just saying then with the violence, it seems that all the big titles is just grimness. Things explore. When I say grim, it makes it sound adult, but it's not. It's just things exploding or just being a bit grim for the sake of it, but not in an intelligent way. But indie games seem to be doing it better, or at least having something to say.
I think that what we're seeing is that most big games, because they've got so big and their budgets are so big and all of that jazz, they stick with the common themes and the common mechanics and things like that. They're not really experimenting, but these people with lower budgets who hold less risk are experimenting with more interesting ideas, maybe looking at things like violence in an interesting way, like Hotline Miami did.
Yeah.
Do you think it's because, I guess a rhetorical question, but in an indie studio, the smaller it is, you're actually going to have a director.
Yeah.
Well, that's it's going to be like this. This is the vision. But if you have a director and a team of 400 people in 8 different offices, it's just a big project plan on the wall.
That's when you have something that is developed by, like you say, like a few people. The character comes through, so you get a sense of that the game is a single person's vision or a small team's vision. So with something like Hotline Miami, it's got a real focus to it and a real design aesthetic, which if it was a big title, it would be more sort of, you know, homogenous blob of various different elements. It wouldn't have its own.
Max Payne.
Yeah, I love Max Payne. But
I think what we've seen this year is really a transition to a really open marketplace where the £2 downloadable game is just as viable as the big $60 massive AAA million-dollar production.
Yeah.
I think I've downloaded more games than I have actually bought games at the shop this year.
Yeah, I think things like Steam and Xbox Live Arcade, they make it so easy. And indie, Xbox Live, the indie games, makes it so easy to get them.
Yeah. The only thing about Xbox Live Arcade, I'll say, is that it's since the Microsoft have focused more on making money on other apps and stuff, it's been pushed aside. And I remember when it was first starting up, you'd check it every Tuesday and it'd be a new game out and it'll be something a bit more exciting, but now it's kind of dying a bit of a death, bizarrely, at a time when everywhere else is becoming really popular. So I'm just hoping that maybe with the next generation of consoles is that when they refocus on games, they really push you back to the front.
Yeah, that's one of the things,
independent games.
One of the good things about Steam is that they really do, you know, involve those kind of smaller budget, smaller studio games. They get them
well with Greenlight as well. They're allowing people to get more exposure and things like that.
One of my favourite games of the year is an indie game as well, which hardly anyone's played, which is based on paper, it's Snake in 3D, but it's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
You can get it on PC and the Xbox Live Indie Store. I can't pronounce it. It's like Kurth Kulith.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You were telling me about this, yeah.
But it's really good. It's a very strange little game, and I really enjoyed it, and I kept playing it and playing it and playing it and playing it. I think it's like 99p, if that. Mm-hmm. And that's just an example of the sort of things that you can source out.
Mm.
Have you guys played a game called Lone Survivor?
No, I haven't. I want to. I haven't got around to it, but it looks interesting.
It's absolutely brilliant. The best horror game that I've played this year, and the best horror game I've probably played for a while. Mm. And it's just a little 2D indie side-scrolling adventure game. It's got the tone is a deadpan for Silent Hill 2.
Mm.
There's lots of references to Silent Hill 2, and it really nails it. I think it's really good.
What I love is... Oh, well, there you go.
And next topic.
There we go, our bells. On the seventh day of Christmas, my true love gave to me lots of money to kickstart my own project. So this topic is a discussion of crowdsourcing in 2012, which has really kind of taken off. Started with Tim Schafer's Double Fine Adventure project and has really gone from strength to strength there. So what do you think of crowdsourcing this year? What do you think of what it's done for the video game industry?
Well, I think we'll have to wait until some of the titles come out to see how successful it's been. But I think it is exciting that you can kind of take the big companies out of the equation and have the fans and the developers, you know, interact and sort of develop these titles.
Mm. Not to double back on our previous point of discussion, but I think this is just one of the other things that is really facilitating things like the development of indie games.
Yeah.
I kind of am doubling back. But yeah, we're seeing like an environment where you can get the money up front to go and develop your cool idea, and then you've got the platforms out there that you can go and put them out anywhere that you want, downloadable.
I also like the fact that some studios that maybe haven't had the best of times with the big publishers are getting the opportunity to sort of go back to a more sort of basic level and just concentrate on the gameplay rather than the sort of, you know, the PR engine or demographics.
Yeah, exactly. And it's showing that there are audiences out there for these different kind of games. Like, Tim Schafer couldn't get this adventure game funded anywhere else, so he went to Kickstarter.
Obsidian's Project Eternity, they wouldn't be able to get an isometric RPG.
Exactly, yeah, but it's showing that there are fans out there that want these kind of games, and they're willing to pay up front for them.
I mean, I don't have a PC to play the stuff on, but it's something I do keep an eye on, and I think it's a really good idea. Mm-hmm. But as Nick kind of related to it earlier on, or just a moment ago, is the risk, and it does concern me a little, because I get a feeling that a lot of these Kickstarter projects do not have project managers.
Well, as a consumer, that does scare me a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've refrained from investing in things.
And they're not liable, from what I understand, to give any money back.
No, not at all. I have no idea what the project is, but I did hear the other day that one of them's finally come to the end of its proposed schedule for when it was supposed to be released. And there's a project that really hasn't released anything, and that person has kept all the money, and there's nothing. People have no legal footing to try and get their money back off him.
They're just sort of like all those mods that people would say, we're doing a zombie mod for Half-Life 2, and it's going to come out next year. It's going to be brilliant. Except you pay for it when it doesn't come out this time.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you've got to be careful, I guess, with all these things, haven't you, about who you're giving your money to.
The only problem is that because it's all under the umbrella of Kickstarter, is that if you get people that don't know what they're doing, have a great idea, but they've got no experience, they think, oh, sod publishers and PR, it's all rubbish, we don't need them, but you do need them, because you need to sell your game, you need people to tell you when to get things done by, and then when it all falls over, it damages Kickstarter's name, not...
We saw that it became a cultural thing, didn't it, early this year, and I think people really jumped on the bandwagon, and that's why you saw things like Tim Schafer's project really skyrocket way past their asking price. But I think we'll see it mellow out a lot as these events where people don't get what they're paid for start to happen.
But I think it's easy to look at things with that sort of cynical outlook, but then there could be wonderful things that we get from this that would never have had a chance to develop in any other system. So, I mean...
Definitely will. I just think we've got because everyone else loves it so much, I think it's good just to give a bit of perspective now and again and just you know, calm down. Don't throw your money... don't throw $20 at 15 games that might never happen. Just, you know, keep your eye on it.
I imagine most people are probably quite canny about who they're... I mean, I know it's not always possible to know, you know, if they're on the level or not, but I think people...
I think the bigger titles, when you've got people in the industry and their name on it, and you know that they understand how it works and how milestones and make sure they get certain things done and who to speak to. But it's just those the lower end of the new entry stuff that's a risk could just tarnish it and ruin it for everyone. But at the moment, if it carries on, then it will become a really big thing.
It'll be definitely interesting to see in a year or so or a couple of years.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm interested in how it's going to mature and what's going to happen to it over the next year.
Like how Tim Schafer's thing turns out are these titles.
Peter Molyneux's thing. I'm convinced that Peter Molyneux's game Goddess is actually just a ruse, and the money that he's got from his Kickstarter, he's putting into his cube.
Yeah.
And that's the Goddess. But next topic.
On the 8th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me some tears because she was crying. She was crying at all the emotional games that we've had this year. Journey and The Walking Dead, things like that. And Major's well up. Guys, have you cried at any games this year?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, God. What did you cry at?
End of Walking Dead.
Shane?
The same. And a tear of frustration at Mass Effect 3 that we've already talked about, so let's not talk about that again. And
I cried when Assassin's Creed 3 made me chase someone for 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah. The tears of frustration came up.
Bad tears, not good tears.
Bad tears. But, yeah, I kind of had a frog in my throat while I was playing Journey as well. Got to say that.
I've not played Journey because it's on the PS3, which is a bit of a git. But, Walking Dead... That was too much.
I really like that we've kind of got these experiences now. Like we were talking before about how everything is a big AAA shooter and it's all just wham bam, thank you ma'am, in your face, cutscenes and all that jazz. But this is why I find these experiences really refreshing. This is why Journey and Walking Dead are two of my favourite games of this year because they've concentrated on designing an experience that affects the player emotionally. And when I say emotionally, I mean with emotions that we don't normally feel in these other games. Because you do feel emotions at the big wham-bam shooter. But rarely have I felt such sadness or connection to a character or just melancholy about playing a game than I have with these two games.
Yeah. It's characters that are reasonably well-drawn. And
well, that's what it was in The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, obviously Journey's a different thing. Video games tend not to have particularly interesting characters or well-written characters. So it's refreshing to have flawed characters that are sort of believable. And I think Kenny's probably one of the best video game characters I've seen this year, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'll take back something I said earlier on, actually, because I've realised these are all kind of joining together now as we talk about E3 and then gaming journalism. But Journey, for example, has just come through as the game of the year from IGN, which we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And The Walking Dead and that, they've given it game of the year. And when you actually think, well, actually, maybe this is now going to start, because I've talked about this before, when maybe this is the year where we're going to get the divide of AAA and independent, like in cinema, where you get all these top 10, 20 lists of film critics that have none of the big blockbuster titles in, but they still both exist at the same time. Yeah. So you'll still get your military shooter making billions, but then you'll have your great games or films coming through as well that people respect in this sort of way. So maybe it is a turning point, and I'm hoping that this kind of emotional game design will bring that through.
What I'm interested to see as well is whether that sort of whether that sense of personality, like a studio acting as a kind of auteur. I know that's technically a single person, but you know, whether Telltale Games will carry on with this with what they've done with The Walking Dead, and whether they can bring that to another game. I know they'll probably do a second season.
Yeah, they will do now. It's too popular not to, unfortunately. I wish they'd leave it.
Yeah, I'd kind of like them to do either a title, you know, a property that they create themselves, or another, or try another franchise out.
You could do.
Just
use the same sort of method.
But I like that we're getting these diverse experiences now. We do have our shooters and things like that that affect us emotionally in the kind of excitement and thrill way. But we do have these games that make us sad and make us think about things.
I mean, I have no idea where that came from either, because I played Jurassic Park, the other Telltale game thing. Bloody awful.
Yeah.
I think a lot of The Walking Dead, I think it's kind of like the property set up to have that kind of emotional story.
But it was much better, I thought, than the comics or the TV show. I mean,
it's definitely better than a TV show, but that's not hard. The comics, well, I felt no real emotional attachment, to be honest. I enjoyed it, but when things
happen,
I was never like, oh my god, no! But with this, I was like, oh dear.
I think The Walking Dead has really shown how you can create a story in video games and have it interactive and have it involving as well.
It must be the first time when a video game has been the best of all mediums.
Best storytelling.
So usually you get a game of a film that's crap. Or you get, you know, it happens like that in the original. But this time, you've had the graphic novels or the comic books, whichever you want to call it. Then you've had the TV series and this. And this, to me, is the best of the three. And
that does
bring us to the end of this topic. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for the final 4 days of Christmas.
Alright guys, on the ninth day of Christmas, my true love brought to me a bit of sexism, which wasn't very nice. So what do you think of what's happened in the industry this year? There's been lots of stories, the most recent of which really has been the One Reason Why hashtag that's been trending on Twitter. So what do you think of what's been happening?
Well, Mr. Murphy on our site wrote the article about it, looking at it, and kind of the idea that by doing nothing, it's kind of the right thing, if that makes sense. If not,
yeah, I think Rich's point was he sees how terrible it is and how despicable this whole practice of sexism that seems so prevalent within the industry is, but mm-hmm. he doesn't know what he can do about it other than treat women that he interacts with as real human beings, as an equal.
Yeah, because Stu's talked about it as well, because he's big into fighting games and the fighting scene, and it's really bad there, and he's highlighted it before as well, about how just kind of accept it, where people will just say, like, yeah, I'm going to rape you while they're playing competitive games and stuff, and it's almost like an accepted language. It isn't.
I mean, it's a strange thing, isn't it? Because it is, it's so despicable. And if all of these things that we read about on the One Reason Why hashtag are going on in the industry, then that's just awful and it's just terrible. Like, you shouldn't, there's no reason why women should be treated like that within the industry, apart from the immaturity and the misogyny of these old people who are running, or these idiot people who are running games companies.
This is kind of an irony to it all, where a video game comes from a group of people that are socially, let's just say, inadequate, sit in the basement, everyone's just gaming away in the dark, you know, because they want to be left alone and not bullied and stuff, and they end up building this fantasy world of women in games and effectively doing it to another group of people by just saying, you know, do you understand what I mean by that? By the fact that, we're tucked away, but now we're going to start saying, okay, all the girls have got to have massive tits, they've got to be wearing next to nothing, you can't have any strong female characters, they've all got to be rubbish. If a game's intelligent, then I need to be able to sleep with the women that are intelligent in it so I can knock them down a peg or two.
Yeah. But I mean, there is that undercurrent in like, geek culture, or, you know, where there's this boys-only mentality and, like, women don't really get it. So you get things like the fake geek girls thing, people going on about how girls are pretending to like the things that they like. Because, like you say, I think a lot of the people who are into it are kind of a bit socially inadequate or awkward. And that's they don't...
Well, that's an assumption as well. You can't assume that everyone...
No, everyone is.
Including I am. I can't talk anymore. I'm just...
No, but I was just making, like, the general point of the idea that people try and get away from something, you know, make video games, they get into that culture, and then they unintentionally or intentionally oppress another group of people with these crazy ideas. And it's like what I was saying before, when we were taking the break then, about Sleeping Dogs, where I enjoyed it as a game, but its view of women in general was an issue.
Yeah, so I mean, you raised some really interesting points about Sleeping Dogs that I noticed as well.
So. Yeah, so basically, most cases, you mean, Emma Stone voicing a character, and I believe she won an award somewhere for it, but basically she walks on and says, "Hi, I'm American." You say, "All right." She says, "Oh, can you take a photo of me in this park?" You say, "Yeah." And then she says, "All right, let's fuck." And then you never speak to her again. And then there's kind of a serious... There's probably achievements attached to it, I can't recall, where you just basically speak to someone once, get the number, call them, and then you might jog for 30 seconds or put your arm around them, and then you fuck. And then in between all that, so you've fucked about four different people in a night. When you're trying to chase someone who, you know, got your sister hooked on heroin and she died, and some guy makes a joke about her sexually earlier on, and yet you then go and do the things he's mocking you for. And then you have a mission where you have to go and call out a woman for cheating, and say how despicable it is, and it's like, are people... So it just felt like that whole section of the game anyway was tagged on as it was just about to leave the door, and they thought, oh, Mass Effect, you can date people, what should we do? Okay, let's do that, let's put dates in. And it just kind of... The fact that as soon as you speak to a girl, he puts his arm around him and swaggers, and...
It's kind of a very disturbing picture of how men and women's relationships should be.
And all the women are thick as fuck, and it's just... Yeah, it didn't... The rest of the game is great, but that was really... made me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, this kind of feeds into what happened earlier in the year as well with Anita Sarkeesian on Kickstarter. She was kickstarting a project to basically write about tropes versus women in video games, and basically a mob of angry, misogynistic, sexist abuse descended upon her purely because she was trying to explore misogyny in video games. There's some awful things. If you actually go back and read what was written to her and the pictures that were drawn, there was some truly awful stuff. I mean, what can you say about a community who does that?
Yeah,
I kind of feel like you get this kind of really very vocal group of people from... group of people who play video games who are very vocal, and they really bring out the worst and try and kind of paint a picture of what people who play games are like.
Really, but as there's always that anonymity on the internet makes everyone into a bit of a prick. But I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is, apart from chemical castration, perhaps. But I mean, that's kind of hard to enforce.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There is a sort of undercurrent through.
And on that bombshell, next up.
So really, don't be sexist, you pig.
Yeah, I think we've sorted out that. We haven't we? We've
sort your shit out. Grow up. And realise that women are your equals and stop designing games like that. Anyway, on the 10th day of Christmas, my true love didn't give to me a PS Vita because I didn't want one because there wasn't many games on it and I play all my games on my iPhone now. So we're going to talk about what's happened with handheld gaming this year. And what I mean by handheld gaming is the dedicated handheld gaming device, the PS Vita, the 3DS, things like that. So personally, I think they've kind of all been overshadowed by everyone playing games on their iPhone.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know many people that own one now. A PS Vita. I don't know anyone that owns a PS Vita.
No, neither do I.
A couple of people that own 3DSs are people that generally just game here and there. I don't know what the right term is. People use casual, but I don't think that's got anything to do with it. But people that just kind of might play it when they're in the car or the train. Oh, there's like the odd RPG that comes out on it that they want to pick up, but it's dwindling out with every release of a handheld. There's less and less people that I know. Maybe it's younger generations picking them up, but the sales don't seem that.
The thing is that the iPhone and these smartphone devices fulfill everything you need from, or everything that I think you need from a portable game. There, you can get some great games on there that are really. You can play for 2 minutes or 3 minutes or really just get something out of them if you just have a couple of minutes for gaming and you want something on the go. That's the kind of experience that I want on the go, not a big Uncharted-like console experience as things like the PS Vita are pushing.
I think what they need to do with the PS4, and I'd be really surprised if they don't, is make the Vita into some form of a controller, like the Wii U pad is, to try and bring in the reason for it to exist, because I just don't think dedicated handhelds, I don't know how much longer they can, especially if the technology keep increasing, so it's more expensive to make games on them.
Well, that's the thing. Sony have taken it down that route where they improve the technology, get bigger, better games, but then it becomes more like the home experience, which is personally not. There will be a niche market for people who do want that on the go, but it's personally not what I want on the go. I just want to play Super Hexagon for 5 minutes while I'm sat on the train or something.
Like a 15-minute cutscene or something. You can't pause it or save it.
Yeah, you can't just make a game with really good graphics on a handheld and expect people to go, all right, that's fine, I'll have that.
Yeah.
There's a reason why people play handheld games, and it's not the graphics, generally.
No, they're small time killers.
Like Pokemon was, if you think about it. That was just short bursts of, well, I mean, you could play it for hours, but it also fit that, pick it up, have a quick battle, win something, put it back down.
Yeah.
And I think that's been fulfilled by a device that you take with you anyway. You take that everywhere anyway. It's your phone, it's like I do everything on my iPhone, I do my banking and everything. Probably shouldn't say that.
And obviously you've got things on the iPad, you know, your tablets and stuff now, so you've got those longer, more involved games that you can play basically like a laptop.
And if you sat at home in your bedroom, you're not going to play any 3DS anymore. You're going to have your iPad.
Yeah.
Play games on the stream.
Well, exactly. You've got your big 3DS, don't you?
So I don't know where it's going to go and if they're going to continue to go down the market. I almost feel like the Sony just keep doing handheld systems just to compete with Nintendo in that market, not because they believe in it. I really don't get the idea that they believe in that market.
I don't know. Yeah, I think they've just backed themselves into a corner with that.
Mm-hmm. I think they just don't want Nintendo to own that whole section of them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how well the PS Vita is doing or how badly, if it is doing badly.
I think it is doing quite badly. I mean, I don't know exact figures or anything, but there haven't been any hits on it, have there? I mean, there haven't been any titles that people have gone...
Oh, Massive that's really taken off, as far as I know.
The Call of Duty was a disaster.
It's getting by.
I mean, I must say, there are some interesting-looking games like Gravity Rush or Escape Plan or things that I think I would probably play if I had one, but they're not enough. They're not the killer app that's making me go, look, I really want a PS Vita.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't fulfill anything within my life. I play games in front of the TV sometimes if I want a big, deep, engrossing experience, and I will play games on the go if I want short 5-minute bursts of gaming.
I mean, what I read on the forum earlier about sales, I don't know how true this is because I've not got a stat in front, was that the 3DS has sold more than the PS3 in its lifetime in Japan. So if that's true, then the 3DS is doing great.
I kind of always feel like the 3DS has its own niche, though, because you're not going to get necessarily 3D experiences like that anywhere
else.
Makes
you feel fucking nauseous, is what it does.
I think Nintendo will always be part of that market because of the Game Boy was such a huge success in every way.
They've got such a legacy there.
Yeah, exactly. So people just follow it every time.
Yeah.
And Nintendo characters sell consoles.
And then went on to 3DS as well because of the name.
Mm. Yeah. They pretty much release the same kind of games over and over again anyway, don't they? I mean, things like Mario.
Yeah, and I think Nintendo, they are releasing things for the 3DS that aren't quite the big Uncharted-style things that Sony had to release for PS Vita.
And that's that topic done. What's next?
Well, on the 11th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me some shares in THQ, which was quite a bad idea.
Not timely.
Yeah, very timely. So the company is selling off its assets now to pay off its debts.
Well, I don't know if it's selling them off or it's done something where it opens up to people just to step in and take over while it's running. I think it happens more because somebody from the company wrote an open letter, didn't they? And it was quite a bit of detail, actually, in just explaining exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
But then there's been rumours about Ubisoft possibly stepping in. Apparently they owe the wrestling license a lot of money for that, so it's still very much up in the air. And I think they have it's Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which basically means they open up the company and someone just steps in. But I don't know where it's going to go, because apparently it's 4 weeks, so by mid-January they have to have made a decision.
I get the feeling a lot of the strategy titles might be picked up by EA, because they have a tendency to go for those PC strategy titles. They've got quite a lot of them under their belt. But there's a lot of good stuff.
Definitely. They've got Metro Last Light. They've got South Park Stick of Truth that they're going to publish.
The only thing about Company Ubisoft appearance. Is if they did Saints Row 4 and used a good like a great engine on it and gave it some direction so that everything flowed better but kept that kind of insane sense of humour where you're just doing the craziest stuff possible. That I'd be interested in, those possible things. But I just don't... Metro Last Light is one of the main games I'm looking forward to next year because I enjoyed the original a lot. So I'm just hoping that it doesn't just all start to end up in limbo.
I think because those games are essentially mostly finished at this point, I think they would definitely find publishers. Metro, it's kind of an interesting one because I don't know how well the first one sold, but it was quite a sort of cult hit, wasn't it?
I think it sold really well on the PC. There's one area where it did really, really well. And if you've not played it, go play it.
They've got a lot of games that are PC only, like Company of Heroes, that get quite a small audience. But I mean,
a very dedicated audience.
Yeah, they're quite profitable, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to those. And obviously, they recently got renewed their 40K license, and they've produced the Dawn of War games, which are good fun. Okay. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with those.
So, like, the games, I've read somewhere that the games will be safe. I know that I've read somewhere is not the best of sources. But
that's the kind of top-quality journalism.
Don't take that as gospel, because it might not be. But I did read somewhere.
I had a dream last night that the games are safe.
Jason Rubin.
Jason Rubin, that was it.
An open letter, then again, it's not guaranteed. There's been a lot of times when games get to 95% complete and then the money gets dropped, that's not because of things like this. So it's never secured.
But hopefully, the games are all safe, and if they need to be, they are picked up by the correct publisher because they've got some really interesting stuff coming.
Yeah, definitely. But this is the only thing that kind of going back to the other thing about PR and stuff is it's a shame that there's not more in-depth look into these sort of situations because there's no way to know what caused this, whether it was mismanagement, whether they didn't get the games coming out. Because, I mean, Saints Row sold a lot.
Yeah.
Well, how many copies of a game do these companies expect to sell now?
It was definitely the U-Draw game tablet.
Oh, right.
Do you know about that? The U-Draw game tablet. But then that was a massive flop.
How can you get... It's just...
There was a thing on Kotaku as well when they tried to get hold of THQ to discover what had happened to a lot of these things. And I think there's games companies now and publishers and developers are so closed. They never want to release anything. They never want to say anything. It's so tight-lipped. So it's difficult for a journalist to find out anything because they just won't. They're not allowed to say anything about any of their titles.
It's locked down on multiple levels. It's not like there's a director or an editor or an actor that can just walk away and just say, this happened.
Yeah.
Down non-disclosure agreements everywhere, I can imagine.
Yeah.
But they can still pre-order the titles.
So
everything's still running, everything's still there, and they had their Humble Bundle sale, which some people took issue with because a big company was using it.
I will be devastated if Company of Heroes goes onto Origin, though.
Oh, no.
Stay on Steam, please.
God forbid.
So I just having a quick look through the letter now that he wrote, and yeah, it's just saying that everything should still be there, and he used MGM as an example, that 2 years ago they entered Chapter 11, and now 2 years on, it's now, and they've released Skyfall and Hobbit, and I think Skyfall's like the best-selling film of all time in the UK, so it's possible.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe it's the kick up the arse that will get these the quality they need.
Yeah, so they could turn it around, definitely. Yeah. But
I think THQ, they have...
And that's the topic done. Next one. Oh.
We need our own Michael Pachter. Do you know who Michael Pachter is?
No.
All right. Go on Game Trailers and... just...
The guy who makes loads of...
Oh, yeah, I know the one you mean.
He's a financial analyst in the industry. He's
wrong all the time.
Yeah,
he is.
Glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, on the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me her opinion on what she thought of 2012 as a year in gaming.
And what did she think?
She thought it was pretty good. It was good for the indie games and things like that. Not necessarily as good for the big AAA titles. There weren't as many interesting ones of those. But generally, she thought it was a pretty good year. And she, being me.
What a weird world we're in.
Right. Very weird world, yeah.
You're giving presents to yourself dressed as a woman.
Well, yeah, I don't actually have a girlfriend. I just put a wig on every now and then.
Does that mean you paint the nails on one hand and then hand over the present to the other hand?
Yeah, I've got makeup on half of my face.
God, we're dramatically veering off topic now.
Definitely! What do you think of 2012, guys?
In gaming, well, I've been pretty negative about it overall, but I think that's just because I'm getting old and I fell out with it halfway through the year. And thought, there's nothing good coming out, and it feels like everything's got a number at the end as a sequel. But I think that's more end-of-generation burnout. As the extra year or two's been added on. And as we've talked through these topics, I mean, we talked about gamer journalism, but then we've realised that a lot of these indie games are getting great awards these years. Mm. And then you've had the Wii U come out, which some people are really into. And you've had the crowdsourcing like Kickstarter. Yeah. So it feels like a lot's happening and rumbling away that I think will come to fruition next year. So I think around E3 next year, when somebody no doubt announces a new console, that all these things, I think, will come together.
I do feel like this year has been a changing year in the industry. It's a transitional year almost to, like we were talking about before, a year where you can have the experiences that are emotional as well as thrilling, and where you have the smaller experiences being just as valid as the bigger experiences as well. I really like that. I want that that diversity within the industry. I think that's healthy for the industry. Yeah.
And you get games like XCOM coming out as well, which are not big titles. We haven't even mentioned that, but that's making a lot of the Game of the Year lists, rightly so. It's always difficult to sum up a year because you almost sort of forget a lot of what you've done over the, what you've played over the year. But yeah, I think there are plenty of moments and plenty of experiences
I've got to say, when we were doing our lists for top games of the year for Thunderbolt, I didn't struggle to fill my 15. I struggled to figure out what should be on the 15.
Yeah.
And when I looked back at what I actually chose in the end, because we choose 15 games each of the editors does, and the writers, I like the fact that there's such diversity in my list. I have a strategy game like XCOM. I have the big action game like Dishonored, but I also have Journey and The Walking Dead and Lone Survivor and the smaller games like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's definitely, I would say there's more diversity in my top 15 list this year than any previous year.
And a variety of different stuff as well, yeah.
Like yeah, exactly, which I really like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're counting up and closing that voting that we just talked about, and we'll be running the articles in the new year. Mm. And when I've been looking through other people's early lists, because everything's not complete yet, there's such a range of games this year compared... I mean, in previous years, you look at people's top fives when I've been writing for the site, and there's been a lot of the same ones there. Whereas this time, it's varied a lot. I mean, if we compare our three lists, the stuff that... We've got games on there that the other person hasn't even played...
Yeah,
very good sign. It's just that the stuff everywhere, rather than it just being, I think there's been less big AAA titles.
Yeah.
And made people think it's a bad year.
Exactly. I've seen lots of complaining, and I think that's really just a symptom of the fact that there's been less good AAA titles.
It's like saying, oh, it's been a crap film for years because I went to see three blockbuster films and they were rubbish. Well, what about everything else?
Yeah.
That came out?
It's watch one of the more interesting, smaller films.
Exactly, which will be most of my top list of films as well. So I think as we go through, I mean, Borderlands 2 had a lot of raving about it, but that was more just 1.5, as we discussed once upon a time as well. So it's not, to use this phrase, bad, it isn't. But like you said, I think the best word is it is changing the most.
Yeah, and people, I think a lot of the negativity as well comes from the fact that everyone was expecting a new console and the cycle to end, but people feel like it's kind of dragged on. We haven't got those new consoles. There's been not been that big release. The Wii U came out to relatively little fanfare because it is essentially a current generation
console. On consoles seem to be a thing that's coming to an end because they need to make a platform to make money. So, I mean, smaller ones are fine, but I'm talking big budget. It's hard. Budget
exclusives, yeah. Well, Sony, you've got, there's the hang on to.
Yeah, a lot of prequels this year, and obviously sequels and kind of a recurring feature, but I think that a lot of these franchises, people were slightly underwhelmed by this year, or at least they didn't dominate the Game of the Year lists as much as you'd assume they did. Like Halo 4 was well received, but I mean, it's
rare to see on a top of the year list.
I mean, I've never been a...
And that brings the topic to an end.
There we are. Let's each just grade the year from on a letter scale. A being the best, F being the worst. What do you think this year's been, Shane?
I'm not grading the year.
You're not grading the year. Fine, I'll grade the year myself. I think it's been a B.
Oh, I don't know about that. But there you go. So that's been the 12 Days of Christmas. Just as a quick reflect, we talked about the Mass Effect 3 ending, gaming journalism and PR relationship, the Wii U, the Steam Box, E3 and guns, whether it was the year of the indie, crowdsourcing, emotional game design, sexism in video games, handheld gaming, THQ, and what it was like in 2012 overall. And on that note, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the 12 Days of Gamesmas.
Speak to you all in the new year.
See ya.
The fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping. And I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight...
Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.